Let's see. What else we got? We got some new reviews. Nice.
Yeah, I thought we'd try to do like a lightning round.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of little stuff here. That's good.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we can kind of like talk about just battle styles more in general. I actually do want to talk about battle styles as like a general set and its impact, because I think it's actually been quite good.
It's definitely like, I feel like it's introduced new archetypes without like ruining, like all the old archetypes are basically fine, I feel like.
Right. Exactly. Like nothing. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like the best set. That's like the best types of sets.
Yeah. Like I would have thought that like if Rapid Strike was super successful, something like Eternatus or Pikaron would just be completely chased out of the meta, but like, no.
Yeah.
I feel like Eternatus is like the most played deck now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah, definitely Eternatus talk. It's gone. It's, yeah, just that, like Azul says, said it was the best deck, so on.
Welcome to the Trash Lanch. It's me, Brent Halliburton, here, as always, with Mike Boucher and Britt Fibus. We're recording on Thursday night because we got to keep attendance at 100%. A couple of quick updates. We got another 5-star review. I would like to thank Pine Dog in Great Britain. He said, great pod, always draws the nuts. Really interesting deck and meta discussions. One of the top PTCG podcasts out there. My only quibble is one of the, what? Pine Dog. Yeah. Come on. People are going to read this review and make an important decision based on it. You got to tell them what's up. I also wanted to note that I got a note in my email that apparently last week we were like the number 31 podcast in Apple in the games section of Apple Podcasts in Canada.
Well, there's a lot of qualifiers, but I'll take it.
Exactly. Exactly. Props to the Canadians for their exceptional taste.
For none of us to be Canadian, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Canadians, they have great taste. It's absolutely fantastic.
Hey, I'm all for those sorts of statistics. One of my, not the lecture I gave today, but one of the last ones is we had, I don't know, we just had this, we had a reading that sort of a lot of the argument was based in the statistics. And I was just like, well, you know, I mean, you got to talk about it on here, not like a mass skeptic, but, you know, I'm just pointing out where there are, you know, holes and stuff in it. And I was like, yeah, look, aren't statistics just kind of arbitrary and stuff like that? You know, it's like, and so I always use the like sports example. It's just like, well, what about, you know, you're watching football and it's just like, well, this team has never lost in the third when there's 4 minutes and 20 seconds on the clock and they're down by three when the quarterback, you know, those are just like, at the end of the day, that's sort of what they all are. It's just like,
oh. Right. It's like you change like one of those numbers by one thing and then that stat doesn't mean anything anymore.
Exactly. They just had to keep adding qualifiers to it. Having said that, the importance of this qualifier is it was in some like email that I got sent, so that must mean it's really, really important to someone. Nice. Some automated algorithm out there was like, you did a thing.
I also want to quick shout out to Mellow Magikarp, Kevin Clemente's podcast. I think it's called Lake of Rage. I haven't really listened to it very much, but I was watching them on Twitch the other day and they gave us a shout out. So we appreciate that and shout out back.
Yeah. Always love it when people say the name. It's a good thing. You know, it's funny. No surprise, because I'm the kind of person that perseverates on the problems. Kevin was like, cold open's the only thing I don't like about that podcast. So it's worth taking 30 seconds to give the history of the cold open and then Kevin can rethink his life choices. But like, so when we hop on the pod, usually we have like a Google Doc where we tried to kind of put things in over the course of the week to talk about, and we'll try to spend like 2 or 3 minutes flipping through the Google Doc, and like if something's old news we delete it, or if there's something we want to talk about we add it or something like that. And I gotta tell you, there's just a lot of times when Mike and Britt proceed to just tell you the answer to a question because it turns out it's not that big, and I'm like, well, we can either do it again and have a second take, or I could just like put it in. So there's if you're looking for like a real slice of life of like how they're thinking about problems in real time before we start the pod, like that is what the cold open is. If they like talk about Pokemon, I'm like, okay, well, we'll just throw that in. That way people can say they heard it.
Non-linear thinking.
Cold open.
Yeah, it's kind of like nonlinear thinking. What we need, and that's what you need in Pokemon to be successful. So we're just applying that to the pod.
Exactly. The cold open is a little weird, but it there's no other place to put it, unfortunately. You know, having said that, there was like one or two times over the last like 35 weeks where I was like, you know, we don't really have anything really good. Maybe I should just start with the song. And then I'm like, oh, that'd be weird. All right. So I had like 10 questions that I thought were kind of the quick lightning round that I wanted to talk with you guys about. And a couple of them are like sponsor related. Is Channel Fireball the absolute best? Do they have any competition at all right now?
No, I mean, so much. I mean, not even getting into the sponsorship, quote unquote, whatever that ends up meaning for the people making videos and writing articles, like not even considering that as a team. They're just like, it's just such a, you know, it's just a multi-game entity, whereas every other sort of quote unquote sponsorship for just other single stores that, you know, just couldn't possibly compete, you know, are more or less relegated to TCG player, I would think. And so, yeah, I don't know. I imagine.
You know, it's interesting how, like, I feel like all of the other content websites have kind of gone away over the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big part of it. Like the only other site that I know of that's having somewhat regular articles is PokeBeach, but I've never had a PokeBeach subscription, so I can't really speak to their quality. I assume it's solid, but I don't really know.
I subscribed once when I wanted to read one of the control articles Grant Manley wrote. I was like, they got me. I'm gonna give them $3. But so do you think that'll change post pandemic? Like, do you think article sites will suddenly spring up, or have they essentially like consolidated a monopoly during the pandemic?
I think it would be logical for new faces, whether that's like new, like team, those quote unquote teams, like actual organizations or something. I would think that because of how popular and successful the flipping market is, and even just Pokemon in general now, I'm not sure sort of how common knowledge it is. I was just always explaining this to friends, but it's like, it's not even just like Pokemon cards that are hard to get. Like apparel sells out on the Pokemon Center and stuff like that. And is like the bot, and there's just bots for everything now too. So anyways, it's just that hard, but I would think clearly someone is smart enough to notice that and is at least willing to take an initial gamble once we have an established like in-person circuit again. I don't think it will be content websites. I think that's just done. I think that was just an, you know, that's anachronistic. We're past that.
We don't need anymore, right?
Yeah, that's just the last era. We're moving on to the next season of the show.
It'll just be podcasts.
Right. Yeah. Whatever, Patreons and so forth. But yeah, I think people will get into it, but not articles, not pay to write anymore.
I think that's a good point about the Patreons. You see, you know, more and more top players and, you know, somewhat content creators doing these Patreons. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit more of that from top players once they start playing more often again and feel like they have a reasonable stuff to put out, because it's a fairly low barrier. Like the people that have it right now are, you know, like Luke Morsa and Danny, who stream and have YouTube channels and those type of things. But, you know, you think of someone like, who would be a good example? Who is a big, like, other, I mean, like, I guess I could be an example of someone that, you know, I don't want to do any of those things, but I could have a Patreon. It's fairly low barrier of entry. And if I just wanted to share lists and maybe like every now and then write a full article or just like write a couple paragraphs or matchups or something like that for different decks, I'm not going to do a Patreon, but I feel like people could do that if they wanted to. And it's just, you could just say like, you know, $1 a month or whatever. And it's like not that expensive. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, it's actually just occurred to me. I think a model that would work really, really well, and I think this, it would be cool to, if someone would like program like an app that would do this, like base more for card games, but to use like, this is something really sort of prevalent in like the like fitness community. Like every influencer sort of like has their own app, or which is essentially just sort of has like their own extension on these apps that are just like for influencers essentially. And so what you could do is like something like that, and you know you always get like chat access and stuff like that. So you could be like, hey, you know, I'll message me and I'll chat with you about your deck choice, and always have access to my deck list, like when it's submitted and stuff before the event and stuff like that. And, you know, just charging a monthly rate. And I would think that would both be more, there would be more interest in that. And it would just be like better overall than like the coaching model. I haven't coached for years. I mean, I guess that's how Brent and I come to know each other. But I've just always felt there's never all that much to say when you're coaching. And I think that just speaks to the complexity of Pokemon more than anything. But I just feel like so much of the game is like your fundamentals, your sequencing. And I just remember coaching. I coached a lot when Six Prizes first started doing it. And it's just like, yep. We did everything right. We're sitting here and we're hoping we need to hit our double colorless now. And no, we're sitting here again and we need them not to hit, you know, X or Y off N and so on. And I just feel like that's too much of it. And like, yeah, sure. That's really good. And from a beginner, absolute beginner perspective, like that's probably the best place to start. But when we're talking about, you know, actually, I might even be a really good person example. I've thought about, you know, getting a coach recently, and it just never seems lucrative to me. So for like someone like above average, I would much more interested. I don't want the like one-on-one coaching, but like a service like I'm describing, like, yeah, and maybe that's just all Patreon is too. But I just, you know, I think there could just be a little more to it, perhaps. And I think this sounds like it could easily be very successful.
Yeah, I certainly, one of the things you said right at the beginning, I think really spoke to me. It's like, I think the market has evolved in such a like weird way where like people are becoming like, everybody's kind of making a run at being a content creator. And the weird thing is like the growth of content creators has driven the value of the product to like basically to zero, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same just in like esports even too. That's because kind of the whole infrastructure, like, so kind of what's happened is that initially, like take your favorite League of Legends pros and stuff, they realize that like, hey, I make more money when I don't have to play in these dumb official events. I make more money when I'm just having fun streaming. I'm not a pro anymore. I'm just a streamer now. And so that's actually just transitioned for the esports organizations now. Like now their money is in, they make way more money on like these TikTok content creators and stuff like that, way more than really anything involved in the esports anymore, which is so interesting because like, I don't know, it's just bizarre for, you know, TSM, Team Solo Mid, this organization, $1 million organization that only exists because of League of Legends, now only exists for this just kind of new bizarre world of content, quote unquote, however you want to call it. But yeah, it's just strange to see. It's just everywhere now.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of continues to evolve, right? All right. Boy, our lightning round's like super lightning, guys. All right. So my next question was, will online Pokemon tournaments continue? And specifically, will Pokemon continue to push them as the pandemic wraps up? Like, I mean, we all recently got shots. Go us, you know, first step towards in-person events.
Yeah, are we the first fully vaccinated Pokemon podcast? It's got to be some sort of
add that to the list of our accomplishments. The resume.
I love it. But like, it made me realize, I was like, oh, yeah, in 2 weeks, like, let's go to some tournaments, guys. But like, I felt like Pokemon almost kind of rushed out the next team challenge and the next Players Cup. And I wondered, even though it seems like they've done a really bad job from a like engineering perspective, trying to set themselves up for success in a like world where people play PTCGO, are they going to keep, do you think they'll just keep like kind of having these side-by-side online and in-person tournaments when in-person tournaments return? Like, is that going to be a thing they do?
I think so. I would guess they will. I mean, it seems very, very minimal on their part, really, what they have to do. So much like the majority of it just takes place in the key system. You only got to keep track of the you know, 1,000 players or however, 256, or no, it's not 256 everywhere, whatever that total ends up adding up to be. But like, yeah, I've thought about that too. And I think we've even talked a little bit about whether or not like the Hegsters and stuff will stick around. And I've speculated, I think that like one probably will. It seems really useful. Like, I don't know. I'm not, even when IRL events come back, and I don't foresee myself having the time or the interest to like go to every regional. So I'm going to be at home probably pretty consistently on the weekend. So like, that's something that would maybe interest me. I don't have a regional this weekend, but I do have an official online event I can participate in, especially if either we get a new online client, or if the rewards map on to the IRL circuit. I think either of those options would be great as well. But yeah, I think they probably will.
That's the only thing that I was thinking, is that the best way that they can incorporate meaningful online events is somehow make it mesh with the in-person events. And there's not quite precedent yet, but we are a lot closer than we were before the pandemic. So barring some type of like CP event online, I could see it going either way. I would hope that they continue to do something, because I agree. I'm likely to do at least some of that.
I would think too that the fact that they've upped the ante for Players Cup 4 with the cash prizes, that's hopefully a good sign, a good indication. Well, I mean, I guess it's not necessarily correlated with whether or not there'll still be events after, online events after the pandemic, but that's hopefully a good sign. I think that they, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily a case of them listening to the community, but it's a better prize, and hopefully they'll continue to get better. And like Mikey says, I don't think there's a better way than to give us championship points.
Yeah.
That's all we want.
So my next question was a little facetious, but I wanted to ask you guys, are top 10 medalists just like nonsense? I mean, I don't know. I felt like I saw one or two lists this past week where I was like, you know, they added two decks to the list, but the ordering of the list just seemed like a little bit random.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, at least in the current meta, like, well, before Battle Styles came out, like, it was very obvious they were the six best decks. Right. And then, like, you could round out the rest of the top 10 with, like, another, I don't know, six or seven decks. But, like, It was a clear distinction between the top six and everything else. Now you might actually be able to fit 10 good decks on there, but I feel like you could still probably make a similar argument. Like, there's always going to be like X amount of decks that are like the really good decks. And then there's like a whole slew, like there's not even like a super useful, at least it's easier to talk about last format because we're more familiar with it, but like taking the six decks, it's not even useful to say like, oh, you know, of these six, Eternatus and ADP are S tier and Pikaram and Blounds are A tier. Like, that's not helpful. It doesn't like mean anything really. It's like there's six decks that are really, really good. And there's the rest of them that, and then there's a whole group that are like pretty good, but like not the same power level. And so I feel like maybe that's just like the way to think about it going forward.
Yeah, you know, hearing you say that reminds me of, here's why people should never invite me to their fantasy football league. The last like go around or two I had with fantasy football, like I tried to build this whole model where I projected out their stats. And like at some level, if I project out their stats poorly, all the models were like totally wrong. So like bad data in, bad data out. But mm-hmm. But like once I built that model, I tried to build lists where I was like, I don't really care about like who's the best tight end and who's the second best tight end, who's the best third best tight end. My question was like, how much better is the first than the second, and how much better is the second than the third, and like where are the big gaps where like, you know, the top four tight ends are all basically the same, but like if you get the fifth, it's a huge fall off, right, and then you could project forward a model based on that, right? Mm-hmm. Like at some level, once they tell you these six are all basically the same, like you're like, okay, we're done.
Right, exactly. Did it work? And, what was that a good approach?
S tier list and A tier. Oh, dude, it totally worked. It totally worked. Although, you know, as I said, it's just a matter of like building the model is super fun because I'm a big nerd. But really, it's about like how well do you know football for that season? Because if you don't project their stats properly, then all the models are wrong.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you think this quarterback's going to be good, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, even worst case scenario, he gets injured game one. You're like, well, that was all great. All right. So I put Eternatus down. I feel like everywhere I look, people are saying Eternatus is the best deck. I want to check in with you guys and see, like, all the top 10 lists I saw, they were all like, Eternatus. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I guess the verdict is, or what I think happened is that people just tried out weakness energy and turns out it's pretty good. And I mean, the Hexters I played last week with the deck, I lost to an Eternatus with weakness guard, and I didn't have Giratina, unfortunately, in my list. So that ended up just being the game as soon as you attached the first one. But similar scenario, it's a will they, won't they situation with the Giratina and the Nets later on. And otherwise just hits well with everything else. I don't know how it fares against Victini. I would think Victini decks probably have a pretty good Eternatus matchup, but then everything else is the same.
Yeah, it's worth taking 30 seconds to just say, for podcast listeners, our working assumption during the course of this pod, and we'll find out in literally like 36 hours, is that Mike has advanced to the top four but cannot tell us. So I think in the context of all these discussions, you know, Mike should tell us, well, if I was playing, here's what I hate about this deck, something like that. But yes, if you do not remember that, you know, we're assuming that Mike has made the top four, but we're not talking about it, go back to the last pod and listen again, get those viewership stats up or something. All right. Yeah. Sorry, Mike. Talk about Eternatus.
We're talking around that, yeah. But Britt, just clarifying, you played Rapid Strike Urshifu in that event without Tina. Okay. Yeah. So I think you're right. The weakness energy is pretty solid in the deck. The other thing that has really given it a boost is running one Phoebe, one Palpad. And so you take out your worst matchup, LMZ, and it goes from, I still think it's like a pretty close matchup. Probably, I haven't really played it much from either side, but I imagine you're like slightly favored. You know, if you end up having to research away a Palpad or the Phoebe early on, just as you're setting up, then, you know, the second Zamazenta can be an issue still. So I imagine it's still pretty close. But like, if you're taking a 50-50 against what before was like a 20-80 matchup, and you're solidly favored versus a lot of other decks, like your Pikaron matchup solidly favored, your Blound matchup is even to slightly favored, your ADP matchup's even to slightly favored. With the weakness energy, I think the Rapid Strike is probably, like, if Rapid Strike's playing Giratina and you're playing Weakness Energy, you're probably unfavored, but still could be close. Maybe they have awkward games that they have to discard Tina or prize it or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know.
When you say it's not a complete auto loss against a fighting type deck, like, that's pretty good.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just super strong.
Theoretically, that's its hardest counter in the meta. And you're like, well, you know, you have a chance.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So ultimately the matchup that, like, if I was playing Eternatus, I'd be the most worried about is the mirror match, which, like, unfortunately almost necessitates playing Crushing Hammers, because that's like by far the best thing to do in the mirror. And I hate playing Crushing Hammers in Eternatus, because it feels like a deck where you just want to set up and do your 270. And so I'd rather devote four slots to consistency, but maybe you just can't if Eternatus is really the best deck. The only other option is, like, you could run like two stamps, and those have utility and other matchups, but that's still like two spots instead of four that are not consistency cards. So at that point, maybe you're just like, all right, just play the four hammers. But yeah, super strong.
Yeah, I know. Still not my type of deck. Video, he was saying he's going with the stamps because he doesn't like the flippiness.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. It's still not really my type of deck. I will not be. I mean, I played it actually in the Limitless event last week, just when it was the day after the Phoebe was first kind of revealed in the deck by someone else, and I was like, oh, that looks cool, I'll try it, and I did pretty well. But yeah, but it's still overall not really my type. But I lost. I didn't play the weakness energies, and I didn't play hammers. I did beat a mirror, but I lost to two Urshifus because I didn't have the weakness energy. And then I lost to something else. Oh, I lost to Azul playing Spirit Tomb, which I should have won that game, but, like, it was really awkward. I just like missed an energy in like the very middle of the game. And if I hadn't missed that energy, I was like ahead in the prize trade and there was no way he could come back. But it's all good.
So any new thoughts on battle styles, guys?
No, I haven't. I know Mikey will be able to talk on it a bit more. I haven't played anymore with it, and I'm just still kind of the same apprehension I had about the Rapid Strike deck. I still have, but I don't have much experience. So I'm excited to see it in action. It seems like the single strike version has kind of just been given up, I think. Like it's here and there still, but you know, it's trending much more so for the Rapid Strike now.
Yeah, was the single strike that we felt like we had seen a week ago like more a function of people say, hey, here's a new card, I'm gonna build a deck with it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, and it's, you know, it's not just build a deck with it, you have the obvious, because kind of the whole package is there for you. It's like, if it was going to work, here it is for you.
I do think the lists have gotten a little more refined. Like, I think Wambolt had a more refined list than other people, but it's still super underpowered compared to other decks.
Yeah, I've seen some. I haven't seen his list, but I remember seeing one list recently, and it was like a very, that's this thing. I was about to say it was a very like non-committal package to the single strike, but that's just it. It was only the Pokemon that seemed less, but it had everything else to it, and I just like that just can't be worth it. Like, you can't play 3/2 of this card and then just, like, not play, like, the tools and the gym and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It played a lower Houndoom, and I can't remember what it had squeezed in. But, yeah, Eternatus being good, I would think part of that has to do with, like, okay, Pikachu is back now for real. We have to play Eternatus again. Whereas always in that first, like, week or two, like, kind of people just forget about it because they're trying the new decks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think really the two big decks that have joined like our previous six best decks are the Rapid Strike Urshifu and Victini Variants. Victini is super interesting because there's still not a consensus of the best way to play it. And maybe there won't be because we've seen Fire in general be very versatile and take many different forms and really adapt itself well just since Welder has come out. And so maybe Victini will just kind of add to that mix. But there's like the Victini Mewtwo, there's the straight Victini. Pedro has been playing like a Lightning Victini where it doesn't even run Welder. And it's like, it's basically like the Mewtwo Lightning but with the 2/2 Victini line. So there's lots of different ways to play Victini, which is super cool. But anyway, Victini, very strong card. Rapid Strike Urshifu, very strong card. And everything else from the set, well, all the other Pokemon from the set, I would say, have not been super impactful. But the trainers have been, like Escape Rope's shown up in a lot of different decks. Level Ball has given some new life to the single prizers, and the single prizers are still not quite at the same power level as the other decks, but they're significantly better, which is cool.
Should we talk about Mad Party?
We can talk a little bit about Mad Party.
Did you guys see Chip's fantastic tweet?
Oh, yeah, about Azul.
Yeah. Want to recognize Chip for doing some absolutely fantastic content creation.
I was watching a little bit of Azul and Chip last night as they played, and I was reminded, like, why Mad Party is not the best deck in the format. Like, Azul's, like, the way that they were... that Azul was drawing was so awkward. And I was like, yep, that was my experience playing Mad Party. And like Level Ball doesn't really, like it gives you a little more consistency, but it's not enough to like make the deck like the best deck. And also I was thinking about this. I don't think we really want Mad Party to be the best deck in the format. Like that would be the same as when Night March was the best deck in the format and people didn't really like that. So I don't know. I just think people also have to be a little careful what they ask for. Like if a single prize deck is the best deck, then nothing really can keep up. Like in theory, if there's a bunch of like multi-prize decks but a single prize deck is by far the best, like that's a problem too, right? Because it's oppressive in a different way if nothing can keep up with a single prize deck. So I'm glad that they got a little bit of a boost, but they're still somewhat inconsististent. I would say it's the same way I feel about Spiritomb. I think Spiritomb's a lot better than it was before, and I played with it, and I think it's pretty good deck, and better than it was before. But I still think it can just like lose to a Marnie, it can lose to a reset stamp, can lose to not drawing a supporter early in the game, it can lose to trying to set up its next attacker, and you just, you know, you have all the pieces except you missed one switch or you missed one energy because you need three or four things every time something gets knocked out.
Well, so as long as we're on the subject, I feel like we should talk. You had a hot take you could not save for the pod, and you had to tweet it out, Mike. The Battle Styles hot takes. I think you said you got 2 out of 3. Krikatoon V will not see play in a tier one deck. Cheryl is the best card in the set. Single Strike will be unplayable.
All right, which one do you think I was wrong on?
I don't know. Me. I guess so. First, let's start with Krikatoon. I feel like Krikatoon's seen more play than we expected. I don't understand it, but it's going away, right?
Yeah, I think people were playing it during the first like week or two just to like see how it is, and now it's not. I don't know. I haven't really seen it played in anything. The only deck that has sometimes played it is some Victini variants that I've seen, and like other than that, totally unplayable. I think it's So I think I nailed that one.
Yeah. So the one you think you got wrong is the Cheryl's the best card in the set?
Yeah, it just hasn't really found its place. And I guess it's kind of the same effect that Leon had, like Britt had with Leon. It's just, it's a little awkward to play a tech supporter. Corviknight, Bronzong hasn't really panned out as a top deck, which is the most natural fit. Togekiss Bronzong didn't really pan out, which even more of a fit. The only like top tier deck then that's already a top tier deck that it kind of fits in is the Urshifu, and we've seen it kind of phased out over as the Urshifu lists have been more refined. It's still pretty good in that deck, but like it's more of a win more card than I don't even know if it's a win more card. It probably does win you games that you would have lost, but it's still just too awkward to have to play your supporter, because on the turn that you would Cheryl, you're probably having to play like a Dedenne or a Crobat that turn to do whatever else you wanted to do. And then it's kind of like, what's the point? Because now you've put a cheap two prizer in play that they can knock out at some point. So it's like, was it even worth it?
I haven't been paying attention. Has Sander built a Cheryl-based control deck yet?
I have not seen this, but maybe we'll see it in the global finals. I know Sander did not make it, but maybe he's helping someone that did.
I think I saw he's working on an expanded Orbeetle, I think.
Ah, nice.
Which will be stage two one? Which will be terrifying, I'm sure.
Yeah, Cheryl and expanded seems like a great opportunity to make Pokemon regret their design.
That could be true. And then what was my third thing? Oh, Single Strike will be unplayable. Well, we already talked about that.
Yeah. Single Strike, as it turns out, is unplayable.
Yeah.
I feel like the moral of the story there is when you're predicting things that are going to go well, it's harder than predicting things that are going to go poorly.
Yeah, that's true.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. My baseline for whenever new cards come out is that they're going to be terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Easy to look at a card and be like, bad, 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 bad. Yeah. But then, like, you see a card, and you're like, I've seen so many bad cards, that might be good.
Yeah, right, exactly. The only other thing I do want to say about Battle Styles in general, I think it's really impressed me as a set, because especially, like, at this point in the format, like, the third and fourth set in a year that come out, you want them to shake things up but not make the old decks completely unplayable. And I feel like Battle Styles has done that really well. We had 6 very defined top decks for, I don't know, the last 6 or 7 months. And now we have 2 more. And the other 6 decks are not unplayable. Luke Metal is maybe like the one that took the hardest hit, but even that still probably has a niche in the metagame. And so by adding 2 more decks, the matchups for all of the pre-existing decks are pretty variable against Rapid Strike and Victini as well. Like Victini is really strong it's good against Eternatus, it's good against Luke Metal, it's not very good against Pika, it's like pretty good, it's like could go either way against ADP depending on what you're playing it with. It's not that good against Blounds, and like Rapid Strike takes very good matchups to Eternatus, very good to Pika. It's like pretty even against ADP, even to slightly unfavored against Blounds, pretty bad against Luke Metal. And so, like, it's added a lot of different matchups, which I think has brought down, like, the oppressiveness somewhat of the other 6 decks, because all the decks now have a little bit more to watch out for. So maybe they have to use like an extra spot or two to try and shore up some of their bad matchups. And that's also part of what's giving the opening to some of the other decks that are not amongst these eight now top decks, you know, stuff like Spirit Tomb and Mad Party, is they're able to capitalize on the top decks spreading themselves a little thinner. You see a lot of decks fitting in Mew now, for example, for the Rapid Strike. And if you're playing Mew, that's one less card that is either a consistency card or something else that could be used in a, you know, in a different, more popular matchup. So
it turns this runs PB and Palpad now. So like fixes some matchups, but if it's not those, it's just decreasing consistency, right?
Right, exactly. So I really like what Battle Styles has done. The other thing is like if you make other decks unplayable with a new set, that means like that is the almost the definition of power creep, right? And so with that not happening, it, you know, maybe we'll have a, how do I put this, like a decelerating power creep curve, which is good to see. I think no matter what, until the tag teams rotate, the powerful tag teams are going to be very strong. And no matter what they print, that's not going to change, because like evolving still sucks compared to just using a basic Pokemon. But yeah, I think Battle Styles has been super awesome for the game, and I'm excited for the next couple months of this format and then the next set as well. I hope the next set is successful in the same way.
All right. Very quickly, I wanted to recognize Ultimate Guard because they've always been super nice to me. They announced their 100% recyclable product line coming to a store near you. Will people buy a product because it's 100% recyclable? No, deck boxes.
Oh, deck boxes.
Does it got Pikachu on it? No.
Yeah, they do not have a Pokemon license. They're very sad about that.
No, I mean, good to see, I'm sure, but I can't imagine it will motivate anyone's consumer habits.
If it was sleeves, I think that would be a different story, because those get reused so often. Like most, like people buy like a deck box, or at least, I don't know. I'm maybe not the best person to ask. Like I haven't bought a deck box in forever, and I still have my deck boxes from like 2005, but like sleeves, I buy them all the time. You got it. So if those are recyclable, heck yeah, I would buy recyclable sleeves.
See, I think the fact that you're using deck boxes from 2005 shows your commitment to sustainability.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've already done my part.
So Players Cup 3, it continues this weekend. So this weekend we see the stream where we're assuming we're going to see Mike dominate everybody. And then concurrently with that, if Mike is still playing, he'll be playing games. Do you guys have any things we should talk about for watching the stream this weekend? Mike, did you record games? Is that a thing we can ask?
I did not record games because I was, long story, but I was kind of like in different settings for the event. So I didn't feel comfortable recording. But I think at least I know one of my opponents did, maybe more than one.
All right. All right. So we will see Mike, but we won't see Mike's cards.
Yeah.
or we might. I mean, I assume they have a variety of games they can choose from, and they choose games they like.
Yeah. 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 None of the matches, even if you record it, they're not necessarily guaranteed to show up on the stream.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm sure they record lots.
They're doing like all of the regions, as far as I know, all in the one stream.
Yeah. I'm assuming that the fact that they took 2 weeks from the time when they asked you to record your games to when they like stream it, I'm assuming production values are going to be absolutely off the charts.
I hope so. Yeah. Like my understanding is, you know, they get all the recorded games, then the different casters and maybe part of members of the production team, like watch all of them and decide which games and which parts of games are the most interesting and do their commentary over that. And then they have people video edit it all together.
Well, I like when you say parts of games. I imagine like an NBA or like one of those NFL League Pass things where they're like going on simultaneous to this. Right now, we're cutting over to Azul, who is about to play a stamp.
Yeah, that would be cool. Like that would be awesome. You can skip all the boring turns. Like, he drew, he attached energy, and he passed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he stamped him, and he got the boss. I am available for commentary Pokemon. You can just do what needs to be saying. He got the boss off the stamp. That's what I bring to the commentary.
You can just use that clip.
That's a great idea.
And I do think the stream is both Saturday and Sunday. I'm not 100% sure, but I do believe that. Yeah.
Right. Lots and lots and lots of stuff. So should we talk about tournaments from this past week? I know Cash had posted tons and tons of data for like March 29th to April 4th, what decks were doing well and what decks were doing poorly. Do you guys want to talk about this for a second? I feel like this is the top 10 list that we should discuss, right?
Yeah. So what do we got? Eternatus number one.
Picaram, it's exactly what you expect.
Yeah. Luke Metal had this like weird resurgence, and then people started playing Phoebe and Eternatus, and I feel like hasn't really been seen since then. So we're still kind of going through like little trends. But the other thing is like a chart like this, it does measure the best decks, but also is somewhat measuring the most popular decks, right?
Right. I wish they would show what percentage of the total decks it made up, because that would give you the real juice, right?
Yeah. Like an average placement or something like that.
Right. I mean, Mad Party is like ninth on this list, but only two people play Mad Party.
I didn't even mention, when I was talking about decks, I didn't even mention Mewtwo Welder. I still can't believe that people are playing that in such numbers again.
I can't either. Like even after talking about it last week, I just keep seeing it. And like you mentioned that Victini deck, where I've seen, you know, a little more of that, I guess, more than kind of the older Mewtwo. But it's just like, I just like, what's the point? That just can't be worth it. Just play it, the other Victini decks, I would think. It's so much space for you to like, to do something that your Reshazard just like already kind of does.
Yeah. It's so bizarre to me. It just seems so bad. Like, it's so bad against Eternatus. Like, if you don't play Victini, if you're just playing the Mewtwo Elder, even if you're playing like the Victini Mewtwo, you're like, your Victini line's thin enough that it's probably not, it's still not great versus Eternatus, but like the regular Mewtwo Elder, like, basically never beats Eternatus. So and Eternatus is the best deck, or at least the most popular. It's some combination of both of those. So like, I don't know, it seems terrible. And Picaram is also like pretty good against Mewtwo Welder. So like, and those are the two best decks and two most successful decks. I'm gonna use that word. Eternatus and Picaram are the two most successful decks, and Mewtwo Welder is bad against both. So why would you play that deck?
So obviously the third one's Rapid Strike Urshifu. And then like way down at like 12, there's like Dragapult Rapid Strike Urshifu. And then way down at like the bottom of Cash's list is Rapid Strike Greens Exploration. Do you guys have any opinions on, like, I don't know what the heck any of that means.
I don't know what Rapid Strike Greens looks like ever. That sounds really, like, what are you even switching to then to reset your attack? That sounds silly. I tried a bit of the Dragapult Urshifu, because in theory it seems great, right? Like psychic and fighting, great typing, but it's you're running two stage ones in a deck, and Dragapult takes two energy. Like, I played against one on ladder using the regular Urshifu, and I was playing Tina, and he attached twice to a Dragapult on the bench, and then he sent it up. He did 260 to my Urshifu for the weakness, and then I went Giratina, scoop up Giratina, and I won the game after that. Like, what do you do after that?
Right. He's like, I just lose. So, Giratina's too strong.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. You're super weak to hammer. You're just somewhat inconsistent. Like the deck's good when it gets set up, but like you're also super reliant on going first and attaching an energy. Where the one, as I've been playing the kind of the more this Jirachi Rapid Strike version, you just need to get the basic down. You don't even need an attachment. And that's a really, really, really big difference, is just getting a basic down, because you have quick balls and you have communications. And you have Jirachi, but you don't have any good way to search energy. So even if you're playing like 12 energy, there's lots of games where you go first, and the only way you're going to attach an energy is by Dedenne or Crobatting, and that feels really bad to do on the first turn if that's the only thing that you need is to attach an energy. Like, so yeah, not really my deck.
Britt, any hot takes on that stuff?
No, I played my team challenge over the weekend, but I've been too busy, which is unfortunate. I've been, you know, just in a couple group chats, and there seem to be some lively discussions on debates, and while I am able to read them for the most part, I have nothing to contribute, and it pains me a little bit. I'm hoping to be able to start playing again a little in another week or two, maybe. Everything said was kind of just common sense, I thought. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so Juan Andre won the Advantage Edge tournament with Pikaram while we were out. Is there anything we should say about his list? It looked like he was just playing Mike's list.
Well,
he's got the tag switch.
He's got the tag switch, he's got escape rope, he doesn't have chaotic swells. That's the big thing he's missing. I will say the one thing that has been really interesting to me with the Pikaram lists, and the one that like Pikaram has done super well. I know like one guy, Bart, has won two major events with Pikaram. Recently, he won the Crollo and he won Sunday Open, I think. And in general, Pikaram has done super, super well. But the weirdest thing to me is that all of them, for some reason now, have added the fourth Speed Lightning energy. And I think that's a really solid card in general, but like, we've been playing 13 energy in Pikaram now for 6 months. Why are we playing the 14th energy now all of a sudden? The only time I ever played the 14th energy is when I was not playing Crushing Hammers. I felt like there was enough space to justify playing the 14th energy then. But like, there's so many other cards that you would want to have, I feel like. Like, I'd rather play the third Air Balloon. I'd rather play second Chaotic Swell. I'd rather play Tag Switch or an Energy Switch or... I don't know. So that's the only bizarre thing to me is that somehow in the Battle Stipes format, 14th, fourth Speed Lightning Energy has somehow become the norm in Pikaram, and I very, very much don't think it should be.
Hot diggity dog. All right. Let's see. You know what? I was gonna talk about Choice Banderson's tweet about the guy who was like, Azul, you're so bad. On YouTube, but
do we have a tweet of the week selected out? Because I thought of one just now.
Oh, do you have a tweet of the week? Because this is a pretty funny tweet of the week, but I would love a better tweet of the week.
Oh, I don't know what yours is. It might be the same one.
And this is just this Choice Banderson tweet where somebody comments on Azul's YouTube channel. You're like not good. You blunder every video I watch. I watched now just to see how you're gonna screw up. And then Azul replies, hey, want to do a best of seven? It would be good content for me to get beaten by someone better than me so I can learn the game better. and then the guy replies, I don't have near the collection you do. I have three legit decks. A best of seven would be tough. And I know you know the game. It seems like you just get caught up in trying to do what the deck is meant to do versus the best play in the situation. I mean, this is just gibberish. But I love it. You know, it's funny. I saw Zach was posting that he's like making his Discord public or something. And it's a safe space. And it just made me realize, like, being, like, a real content creator versus whatever the heck we're doing just seems so tough, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Creating a Discord
for
people to hang out in? That's crazy.
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, people are jerks. It's unfortunate. I wish people were nicer. Okay, so what's your tweet, man?
Oh, well, I don't know if it was just a bit or not. It's unclear to me. But so Kiernan, who I mentioned last week, he has a new Twitter thread about just asking what's your most like toxic player trait. And this guy responds to it with just the most, the like baldest admission to cheating I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, I did see this.
It's so funny. Mine has to be telling my opponent that I have no basics to start when I have Dedenne. I usually hide it under a card. They're usually quick to look and don't count the cards. I shuffle and hope to start a better mon. Definitely have to unlearn it.
Definitely have to unlearn that whole thing. I felt like later there were some tweets where he was like, just kidding. And like, it just goes to show, man, you know, joking
there was,
around.
I think, one more in there that wasn't quite as egregious, but it was still just like, you don't do that. That's cheating. I don't know.
Yeah, it absolutely baffles me when people do stuff like that. Crazy. Like
full admitting it too. Crazy.
I remember, I don't know how it's been explicitly in the rules or if it's explicitly changed at all, but I just remember this story from when I first started Nationals in 2010. The senior just from my city that I was in made top 16 of Nationals, and he's playing against Mike Diaz, and so like it's an SP mirror, and he mulligans, and in the SP mirror, like you know, you kind of get into some dicey scenarios based on how you start. There's a lot of ways you can get donked. If you start with like a colorless weak Pokemon, you can get donked by an Ambipom. You could get donked by like the same colorless weak Pokemon. And so my friend essentially did like just that, but like didn't know it was against the rules. And there was huge, it took the judges like hours and hours to like rule on it. And they didn't disqualify him or anything, which is weird. He just got like a prize penalty. And obviously the rules have changed so much that I imagine he would definitely get disqualified now. But I just thought it was just like a bizarre story. And just like, here it is again, like, no, just stick to the rules. Don't try to like, I don't know, maybe put it this way. Like, don't, if you're like trying to game the starting procedures, like you're probably cheating. You know, if you're trying to game any aspect of the rules themselves, you're probably cheating.
There's nothing to game there, right? You just have to start the dead end. Like, right. You don't have a choice. So it's
right,
not
right,
like,
right, 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 right.
You're like being tricky. You don't have a choice, right? Like, it's just straight cheating.
Yep.
Hilarious. Is there anything you guys want to talk about before we talk about Team Challenge?
No, I don't think so.
It's got a good little update.
All right. So I went through the pairings to try to bring thrilling news after our discussion last week based on like Andrew Wambolt's post of all of the teams. And so here's the like lightning fast summary. Computer and Gaming Universe, which is a Frank Diaz and Mike Nui's team, lost in the round of 1,000 to Alternate Universe Wilmington. GameStop with Alec Wilson is out. Gnome Games with Franco Lamas and Caleb Gettimer, they're out. Misty Mountain lost in a round of 500 to Bell Book and Comic. Misty Mountain is Brett Stratton, Ross Cawthon. Paradox is out. That's Cody Graham, Carl Kujak, Rithke, Kyle Warner. Paul's Gamer Zone is versus Evolution this week. Let's come back to that. Wasteland Gaming is out. That's like Ryan Alred and Ahmed Ali. Unrated Gaming is out. That's Isaiah Bradner and Kenny Britton's team we talked about. Utopia Gaming is out. That's Azul and Ryan Antonucci. So
lots of these big teams out.
Yeah, like I feel like the people that Andrew Wambolt was like, these are the people that Maplewood Hobby needs to be scared of. Like half of them got eliminated, getting us to this point. So Paul's Gamer Zone is versus Evolution this week. Paul's Gamer Zone is John Creewall and a bunch of other guys. And Evolution is Mama Szymanski, Alex Szymanski, Josh Frank, Jeff Duclos. So like big scheme of things, that's what's going on. What happened with you guys?
Britt, you go first.
I can go first. So I guess because my round this week sort of has two stories to it. The first was just sort of, as I've expressed before, I didn't really have much interest in like being really, really serious about this. And most, I would say a good percentage of that is really just because I didn't foresee myself being like successful and like I just knew the kinds of people I would be having to try to convince and just knew that effort like would not be the answer and to just sort of like let them do what they want. And that's just definitely what would have happened. So I'm glad I was just right in that prediction and just came and just was going to go with the flow no matter what. But so as part of that story, it was my team just really, really wanted to bring Spiritomb this last week. And as passively as possible, I was just like, maybe let's think, you know, but even up till submission, I was just like, whatever, I'm playing Pikachu. Don't worry about it. We'll be fine. And so, and even part of it that ended up being funny is I got outnumbered. It wasn't just the guy that wanted to play Spiritomb. It was actually another guy being like, no, I think we stack up really well if we bring the Spiritomb deck. But we ended up sitting it out. And so it was I played Pikachu again. And then we had the LMZ guy played LMZ again. And I guess we had two Pikas last week. And so this guy, actually, I think so. This was the guy that sat out week one, I think. He played ADP. And then it came down both rounds, my first week and this week, came down to the very last game. We had to win. And unfortunately, we lost this last one. Our ADP player played a bad list and got swept. Lost all three rounds. It was a mess of a list. It played, I don't even know what it played in terms of trainers. I can't imagine. I actually didn't see it, but it played Aegislash, Empoleon, Zamazenta,
Well, the tech for everything instead of just winning.
Yeah.
Was
not consistent clearly as he got swept. Yeah. And they had their, and so our opponent's three decks were Centiscorch, Eternatus, and Green's Dragapult. I forget what they sat out, but I did, expectedly, I beat the Centiscorch and I beat Green's Dragapult. And I lost to the Eternatus pretty badly, but it was actually unfortunate. Like, it was one of those games. I don't know how often this has happened to you, Mikey, but I was going wild with the hammers. I just didn't have anything else for some reason. Like, yeah. I just didn't have the attacks, or like was able to like hammer grunt, but then like whiffed an energy, like stuff like that ended up kind of being the series rather than the more typical just like no hammers, and then I lost. But I was really happy with my play. You know, I guess I'm fortunate that we lost, but it was a fun. As we've talked a little bit about the frustrations of, I think, just the broad format of the team challenge, but the playing with multiple people at once is a lot of fun, I think. Ooh. Or at least, you know, maybe some of it is just having like the human aspect of it again. Like, there's just, it's like being at a tournament, you're chatting with your neighbors. So I'm sure some of it was that too, but I really like the format, and think, as Mikey will be able to talk about the team he had to play against, think like there was some strategy to it, and I don't think anyone really probably took it seriously enough. And I enjoy that, or I enjoy these, you know, other games within the game, just new meta games. It's just a lot of fun. I like it, and think it's a successful format in Magic, and it's always something I would want to see in Pokemon. And in Magic, it's even better too, because you don't even have to play the same format. You could play various formats the whole time. I just love that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It's funny, I like your enthusiasm. I felt like it was like, I thought we were kind of starting from a point of like, it's weird because the RNG is so much higher because you don't necessarily know these other people you're teaming with. So you're like, you start off with down because you're like, even if I do good, I put my fate in the hands of potentially not good players. That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, in part of my fervor, my interest again is like, okay, now I had fun. This format rules. I'm gonna qualify with a team. You know, I wanna try to, you know, make that work next time. I think that would,
right.
That's the key to
success. We gotta rig the game a little more next time, right? The Kenny Britton, Isaiah Bradner team. What the heck?
Yeah, what if I'll become my own league leader, and I won't advertise it, and somehow no one will enter it, but
exactly.
Or whatever, and we just have all four of us together, and heck, just bring in Lay while we're at it. He doesn't have a PTCGO account. They won't know he's there.
Nice. All right, Mike, what happened with you guys?
All right, so we brought the same decks, more or less. Justin brought Pikarom, Will brought ADP, Kettler brought Decidueye. I switched it up, I brought Tempozard, Blacephalon. And our opponents, one of their players didn't submit a list, so it was just three of them, and they all submitted ADP. So we had to play against three ADPs. They were all very similar lists. They're all pretty solid lists. Only one of them had an Aegislash. The other two did not. So Decidueye was a natural bring. Pikarom was a natural bring with its pretty solid ADP matchup. They did all play one Rusted Sword, but Pikarom was still pretty solid. And so we were kind of debating, do I sit out with the Tempozard, or does Will sit out with the ADP Mirror? We decided Will to sit out with ADP Mirror, and so I did play this week. We started off really poorly. I lost my first round in a three-game set. It was just kind of like, whatever. Kettler played against one of the not Aegislash lists and lost. He got like Mawild poorly and whatnot, and so he like... We thought for sure that was like a free two wins, and he lost the first one against non-Aegislash. So we were down 0-2 to start, and then Justin won. So we were down 1-2. And then my second match, I won the first game. And then in the second game, I was like screen sharing on Discord, and we were talking about a play. And you know how when you're playing, if the timer comes up once, it comes up a little quicker in future times. And so like I was quickballing for something, we're talking about what I was going to get, and the timer came up and it said 10 seconds, but the Discord screen sharing lag was like enough that it just ended my turn. And I was like, I had six energies on a Reshadard and I was going to one shot his ADP on that turn. So I like just immediately lost that game, which was really unfortunate. And then I lost the game three. So I lost my first two matches. And so now at this point we're down 1-3 and it like should be 2-2. But so I was like pretty frustrated. But then Kettler beat the other ADP without the Aegis Slash and Justin won again. So now we're, 3-3, right? Yeah. 3-3. Yep. Justin's 2-0. I'm 0-2. Kettler's 1-1. So we need to win two more, but one of them is Decidueye against ADP with Aegislash. So like that's an auto loss. We can't win that one. Yeah, right. It is 2 out of 3. It's 2 out of 3 as well. So like can't. So then I win my match, which was pretty close, but yeah, I won. And then Justin takes it home, going 3-0. Against ADP with Pico. So it was pretty intense. It was really close and a little scary. There was like multiple. So I played 9 games against ADP, I guess, because all of my games went to 3 things. All my sets went to 3 games. I mean, I think my opponents got like, I chose to go second, you know, whenever I could, right? So I think I went second maybe, I don't know, let's say 5 times, be generous. And so out of like the 4 times that my opponents went second, I think they got the turn 1 altered 3 out of 4 times, which is like not that likely. I think on average ADP gets turn 1 altered going second like maybe 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4 games. So that made the games really hard. Like there was lots of Mawiles happening in all of our matches. So
I was gonna say, were the guys who didn't run Aegislash running 2 double Mawile?
They were not. They were only running the 1. So they really
That's just bad luck.
Like it was just like, yeah, they just like got ahead in it against Kettler and then the Mawile was just able to finish it off. Right. But so I didn't know any of the players that we played against. They all played pretty solidly. They had good lists. And if I was them, I feel like what they decided to do was like a really good strategy. I don't know if they did this same strategy the first week, but I could imagine if you're familiar with like good players and you see that you're playing against my team, which is, I don't want to toot my own horn, but like, I mean, we have a lot of notable names on
Wimble
our team.
Wimble tooted it for you.
Yeah. And so like, I could see someone like looking at that and being like, oh crap, we're playing against these guys. Let's just play ADP and hope we do ADP things. I think that's like a super good strategy for those people to pick if they don't think that, you know, they can necessarily outplay a lot of intricate matchups and like, and whatnot. Like I think they were super smart about it and they played well, so I have a lot of respect for them. Super frustrating for us to play against because ADP can be frustrating to play against, but yeah, lots of respect. And so now going forward, we actually play against Wimbolt this weekend.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So do you know what decks they're bringing?
Not yet. I think those come out tomorrow. I gotta finalize my deck for it. I know Wambolt brought Single Strike last week. I'd be surprised if he brings it again, but I don't know, maybe he will.
What store is Wambolt playing for?
I think it's Yeti. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's
Yeti. Well, that's just why I asked. So I figured it was a St. Louis one, and I didn't see his name here on the chart that he made. Be curious to
I assume, I mean, theoretically Yeti has the mojo to assemble a cheater squad, so
yeah. I'm sure it's just a handful. I don't know if the Krecklers would play, but I'm sure it's probably just a good chunk of the St. Louis players.
Yeah.
Right.
They're probably pretty solid.
Do you guys anticipate bringing the same decks or mixing it up?
I think Will and Justin will continue rocking Pikarami and ADP, maybe slightly tweaking lists week to week, but like Justin's super comfortable with Pikarami. Will's very comfortable with ADP. And then me and Kettler are kind of like going back and forth on stuff. So I think I'm going to bring Rapid Strike this week because I played it a bunch in testing and I really like it. And then Kettler doesn't really want to play Decidueye again. And Luke Metal doesn't really seem like a great play anymore necessarily as kind of like a cheese deck. So he's been talking about maybe playing Mad Party. And I feel like that's pretty solid bring, especially like if Wambolt brings Single Strike again, like especially Mad Party is a sweet bring.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as you were saying, Britt, it's interesting how, because the meta is like so small, you can kind of, and you get this choice where you can put one out. You can say, hey, we're going to play we're going to play one kind of rogue fringy deck because it might have favorable matchups, be it Decidueye, right. be it Mad Party.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. and then we can look at our matchups and be like, oh, yeah, this is a thing, right? You're like ADP and only one has Age Slash. Let's go.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so I guess Mad Party does kind of fit that build too. You're right. So Kettler's our wild card.
right. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I wish we could talk more about Players Cup, but next week.
All right. Mike can tell us now about the secret list he's working on for